A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Phil, I can already tell this is going to be the most peaceful,
tranquil, calming, relaxing
podcast we've ever done, because it's just me and you, Phil, no JB. So hands gently in and pod on three. One, two, three, pod! Yeah, the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast after round 21 of the Aviva Premiership and Pro 12. And there's all sorts of stuff to talk about as we head into the final week of domestic rugby action. Plenty more talking points besides, all without JB, who is in Marbella. We just tried his phone and didn't get any response whatsoever. We're not too surprised about that.
Not at all. Knowing JB, he's probably drinking a cranberry Bellini, watching the sun go down in Marbella.
We can make it feel like JB is there because we have got a virtual JB, which I will make sure gets included in the podcast at various points. I mean, he does a lot of ranting and he does a lot of talking. He talks a lot of sense from time to time. But most of all, you know JB for just saying,
"Let the boys play! Let the boys play! Oh, let the boys play! Just let the boys play!"
There we go. You'll hear plenty of that. Now, there's some absolute treats in store on the podcast today, but I know where I want to start, and that is, it's more than just the result, it's just the whole organisation, the whole club, Exeter Chiefs. They're just special. That was a special performance in their away win at Saracens. They're a special club.
Yeah, absolutely. Shocking performance. I think all of us...
Shocking in the good way.
Shocking in a very good way. In a very good way. All of us predicted Saracens to win. Shocking because of the end result, but also shocking because of the manner in which they did it. They went out and matched Saracens up front and ultimately beat them up front. That rolling maul that led on to Thomas Waldrum's cannily taken try.
Oh, yeah. All his years of experience for that one, dotting it down at the base of the posts.
But from a rolling maul that started 30 yards out and gained 20 of those yards, and then just the big ball carriers that they've got, Waldrum, Ewers, that pack, that front row that they've got doing all the damage. Very, very impressive.
We'll get into the ins and outs of what it means for the final week of the season and the permutations and all of that. We've got our resident stat man, Phil, he is here, so he'll give us all the information on that. But I just look at Exeter Chiefs as a club, and I was thinking this, if I had to explain Exeter Chiefs to someone who's a football fan, I don't know if there's any football club that you could actually say they are the rugby equivalent of, because I thought about it and I would go, well, would it be Stoke or Swansea, who came up out of the lower leagues, built a new stadium, got really great fans and have established themselves in the top flight? But what Exeter have done that no football team's been able to do, and maybe this is because of the salary cap and everything, or maybe it's something special down at Exeter Chiefs and Sandy Park, but what they've done is they're managing to get in with the elite and in with the big clubs that have always been in the top flight.
Yeah, I don't think there is a football club. And partly the salary cap, and conversely the lack of a salary cap in football and the pressure and the financial impetus that's put on staying in the top flight. The most important thing is just to buy players in who can do a job in the top flight, whereas Exeter have done the opposite way. They've brought a few players in, but none on really big books, no one who's going to kind of change that team mentality, but they've built it around good, solid young players and doing the basics right. And the way that Rob Baxter has got them playing rugby is absolutely superb, really good to watch.
Do you know what I loved about Rob Baxter's post-match assessment? He said, actually, whether we won or whether we'd have got, whether Saracens had scored at the end there because they were pressing towards Exeter's line, he said, do you know what, it wouldn't change because the performance was what I wanted. He's more than any other head coach, and I think he's performance orientated, and I think a lot of head coaches would do well to look at that model because, you know, on any given Sunday or Saturday, you will win or lose, but the way you go about it is the bit you can control.
Yeah, and there was a marked difference between his reaction during the game and then at full time and Richard Cockerell.
Oh, yeah.
He is feeling the pressure. You could see it. Every try that went over, he was punching the air, jumping out of his seat. And at the final whistle, he was really like fist pumping, really going for it. You could see that meant a lot to him, a lot to the club, a lot to the players, but it also possibly meant that he's in a job next season. Because if they'd failed to make the top four and if Wasps had won that game, they would have had a real uphill challenge to actually make the top four, then he might not have been the head coach next season.
I was looking down the 15s and going, man for man, which Exeter Chiefs do you take over Sarri's players? And probably Ewers over Kelly Brown.
Yeah, I'd go for that.
Waldrum over Jackson Ray. Dean Mum over Maro Itoji. Henry Slade over Chris Wiles. Although Chris Wiles has been absolutely awesome all season.
Superb all season.
And was again. But I guess the point is they went away from home and again, they are better than the sum of their parts. And I think it would be a brilliant thing for the Aviva Premiership, but obviously a brilliant thing for Exeter Chiefs, for a club like that who go about their work in the way that they do to reach the top four. Whether they will or not, well, that's all up in the air. Exeter Chiefs had to win, but all possibilities are still open. Well, Leicester, you mentioned Richard Cockerell. What a shift they put in as well.
Yeah, again, we all predicted Wasps to win. We all got it wrong. And again, it was the manner of the performance that shocked me because Wasps were top try scorers in the Aviva Premiership.
Yeah.
They no longer are because Northampton had that big win against Welsh.
Fact!
But they didn't score a try. And Leicester scored three good tries. And we've seen it before when Leicester have actually tried to play a bit of rugby. They tried to do it at Harlequins early in the season and came well and truly unstuck. But this, they got the platform right. They played at the right time in the right areas and scored some good tries and thoroughly deserved the win, I felt.
Ben Youngs is quite a cheeky player on the pitch, but he was quite cheeky. So they did the toss live on the telly. Captain Bantos, Haskell and Ben Youngs did the toying toss. And then Ben Youngs went, yeah, I'm really looking forward to the game. There's 32,000 people. We're bringing our 18,000 Leicester fans down the road. It was like there's real niggle between these two clubs now. I mean, they were two big stalwarts of English rugby, but a new rivalry has well and truly emerged, doesn't it? To rival Northampton Leicester.
Definitely. When me and you, Tim, went to watch Ulster play Leicester earlier on in the season, it was shortly after the Wasps' move to Coventry had been announced, and there was people there complaining because they know people who've had season tickets for 10, 15 years who come from Coventry and just drive the, whatever it is, 30 miles down the road, 20 miles down the road to Leicester.
Yeah.
That did make it more interesting. A bit disappointed by Wasps. We've been talking up their pack all season and talking up the controlling effect of Andy Goode, and I just thought neither quite worked as well as it has been doing for the rest of the season. I thought the Leicester pack was superb throughout.
Guys like Parling coming back and Iertsa coming back, all ready to add to Mullapola and Dan Cole, who's now firing on all cylinders. It's doing what Leicester do, isn't it? They're so predictable. We could have said this is what's going to happen.
It's in their hands, which you can't say about Exeter and Saracens because they're 1 point ahead and they've got more wins than Exeter and Saracens. If they get 4 points, regardless of the...
All right, rewind, because, so go on. Lay it down, how it's going to happen.
Okay, so Northampton Saints, 76 points, definitely qualified, definitely home semi-final.
Fact.
And we'll definitely be playing the team that finished in fourth. Bath, 70 points, definitely qualified, definitely home semi-final.
Fact.
And we'll definitely be playing the team that's finishes in third.
Fact.
All right, cool, with you so far.
Leicester are on 64 points. If they get a 4-point win at home to Northampton Saints, they will definitely qualify.
Fact.
Because they've got more wins.
Because they've got more wins. The way it goes
and
is,
the best anyone would be able to do would be to equal their points tally. Right.
Both Exeter and Saracens could potentially, with 5-point wins, equal their points tally, league points tally, but then Leicester would have one more win. Then, in fourth place currently are Exeter Chiefs, who are on 63 points, with 13 wins, who are tied with Saracens, who also have 63 points and also have 13 wins.
So let's assume both get 5-point victories next week.
Well, then it goes
down. They'd both be on 68 points.
Yeah.
Both have the same number of wins.
Yeah. But currently, Exeter have a 3 points difference advantage over Saracens. However, Saracens play London Welsh away and Exeter play Sale at home.
If you had to put red or black in the casino, you'd put your money on Saracens.
Saracens.
With a 3 point cushion for Exeter, that's not going to be enough. So it's Exeter or Leicester. Saracens will go through.
Saracens will get a 5 point win. Pretty confident in saying that already. So they will definitely be on 68 points. And then it's just whether Leicester can win. And if they win, they go through. And Exeter, again, you'd expect them to win. So it really relies on Leicester.
It's all on Leicester, yeah.
If Leicester win, they go through. And Exeter Chiefs, most likely, unless you can put 50 points on Sale, which they did at the back end of last year, but it's a more difficult fixture, then Exeter could go out. I think, like you said before, Rob Baxter would still look at this season as a big positive.
Absolutely.
They're young players.
And let's rewind to the start of the season. What was everybody saying? There was predictions in newspaper before the season of Exeter finishing 9th or 10th.
Yeah.
11th, yeah. I think, even in one case.
Because
they were
wow.
like, you know, it was like, how are they going to get by with all these kids? But what you've actually got is Sam Hill, Henry Slade, Jack Knoll.
Mullet-Dickie.
What? Seriously?
<Dave Ewers. laughs>
He had a really good game, Luke Cowan-Dickie, against Saracens. Really abrasive and loads of ball carries and tough. But I can't... He looks like something off Grand... you know in Grand Theft Auto when you go out into the countryside? He looks like someone you find out there.
The whole season is building for next season if they don't make that top four. And if they do, having gone to Saracens and beaten them away, they shouldn't fear anyone at all.
No.
Because there will not be many teams that do that.
Oh, it's exciting. I absolutely love it. A little light intermission right now because he's been at it again. The Honey Badger. Nick Cummins. I mean, I'm actually going to lay claim to this. I think we were well ahead of the curve on the Honey Badger. We were. I think we introduced a lot of people to the magic of the badge before he became this household name. And now he just gets wheeled out by the TV cameras, doesn't he? I think he's contractually obliged now to do every post-match interview. And now he's got a rod for his own back, because if he ever doesn't come out and do a funny analogy, there'll be a sense of emptiness and real disappointment. So I reckon he's, in addition to his training, he spends all week going, right, just researching and coming up with another analogy. And he's done it again. So it was a good win for the Western Force against the New South Wales Waratahs, wasn't it?
Very good win.
Really impressive win.
And ends 10 straight defeats by the Western Force.
I reckon someone should start, by the way. Maybe we should, I'll make a bit of music and we'll have a little sound effect and something and we'll have the Nictionary. That's what I thought of for Nick Cummins, for all these little one-liners he comes up with. Sweating like a gypsy with a mortgage. And one of my favourites one was, last year we were all sizzle and no steak, but now we're off like a bride's nighty. Well, following on from Western Force's win against Waratahs, here was Nick Cummins at the weekend.
You've played them twice, you've beaten them twice. Tell the rest of the competition, what's the plan?
Mate, basically, you've got to be like a midget in a urinal. You've got to be on your toes.
No, listen again, right? Because I'm putting this to you, as I just said, it's now like he's got to say something funny.
The pressure's on,
you think? The pressure's on. I think this, it sounds rehearsed. The way that the TV guy tees him up for it.
Well, you've played them twice, you've beaten them twice. Tell the rest of the competition, what's the plan?
Mate, basically, you've got to be like a midget in a urinal. You've got to be on your toes for the whole bloody thing.
You might be right. There's only so much one man can do. So perhaps he's got a team of writers or someone like that.
Well, here's the plot thickening, right? Because I thought I'd heard that before and I've remembered where I heard it before and I found where I heard it before. And if he is getting extra little bit of wedge from, coming up with great little one-liners, then the writers behind Naked Gun will want a slice of that, because this is Naked Gun 33 and a third.
Like a midget at a urinal, I was going to have to stay on my toes.
Oh, wow, rumbled.
Rumble there, the badge. Come on. What are you going to come up with next?
Got to keep it fresh.
And while we're staying, let's stay in the Southern Hemisphere for a second, because something else that was incredibly entertaining but on the field was Sam Whitelock, the New Zealand and Crusaders second row, who scored an unbelievable try from, 60 metres?
Well inside his own half and going diagonally as well. Long way he's gone for that one.
Inside his own half, the ball was there at a ruck and he gasses some backs with proper pedigree. He hands off, he breaks through tackles. It's one of the best tries the second row has ever scored.
Yeah, undoubtedly.
Let's hear the commentary.
It's a first touch in the game. Whitelock. Sam Whitelock. Look at him go. Sam Whitelock. Please tell me this isn't happening. What the? My goodness.
I really thought he was just going to go, what the?
It's incredible. So long, dudes.
That is amazing. And that was in Richie McCaw and Dan Carter's last game for the Canterbury Crusaders as well. Well,
last home game. Last home game, for both of them. Yeah, I did see something on, I think it was Fox Sport Australia, that reported it as Sam Whitelock goes over from close range. if that's close range, I'd like to see a long distance effort.
I was trying to think of like other forward. Well, actually, like Xavier Chocky for Toulon, the loose head prop, he scored an incredible try as well this weekend. Handed off three and ran it in from about 40 yards.
Yeah, really surprising turn of pace for someone so chunky.
Didn't Simon Shaw? I was sure Simon Shaw for the Lions scored a 50 yard try
in one of the. Midweek games.
Yes, it was. Oh, have I got it here? Is this it?
Beautifully done by Simon Shaw. Now, who's he got with him? That might not need anybody. This could be one of the great tries of all time. Still going. What a run from Simon Shaw.
Oh, no.
Now, this should set it up. Neil Beck. Oh, Beck's going to...
Neil Beck doesn't score it. Like Neil Beck does.
Taking the glory.
Simon Shaw does 60 yards. Neil Beck does one. And that's how Neil Beck became the highest ever Premiership try scorer for a forward, which has now been equaled by Thomas Waldrum as well.
Oh, has it?
It's been with his two tries today, or Sunday, took him level with Neil Beck.
Fact.
And one behind, I think it's Dominic Chapman or... But the guy from Richmond.
From Richmond in the season.
In the very first season of the Premiership.
Only tries, I was racking my brain trying to think of forwards tries. There was, a few by Tom Croft. He's not quite the same as Whitelock, who does a lot of the hard work, graft. The other one, do you remember Radiki Samo's...
Yes! 2011, I think that was.
Yeah,
yes.
International Try of the Year a few years ago.
Yeah.
From at least 50 metres against New Zealand.
Oh, that was amazing.
That was a sensational try. Radiki Samo at 36, or however old he was then. Age unknown.
Here we go. Radiki Samo video.
To the 22.
Pocock.
And Pocock does well. Snatched it away from Richie McCaw. Now it's Samo. And big Radiki throws a dummy. Gets rid of one. Radiki Samo. Clear run to the line. Can he get away from them? Samo. 5 metres. 3 metres. Over.
Oh, wow.
Amazing.
Handed off. I think it was Adam Thompson.
Adam Thompson.
Thompson. He hands him off. And then gasses and manages to keep Corey Jane and Mills Miller, no, fullback.
Israel Dagg
manages to keep him off.
Yeah.
It's incredible. So, yeah, if you've got another suggestion of a great forwards try, then let us know. We talked about Dan Carter and Richie McCaw, their careers, for Crusaders at least, being over. One person who's now retired permanently, Hugo Monnier and Mark Cueto.
Yeah.
And you sort of have to go, why are you retiring, Hugo? with finishing like that on Friday night against Bath.
Yeah, absolutely. The first one was nice, comfortable running. The second one was a hell of a finish, wasn't it? Mm. Ran over Anthony Watson, and then with two or three players like corner flagging and pushing him into touch, still manages to get the ball down. That was pretty special. And I think he's only 31, 32, so... He could keep doing it.
I just think when he's got all that time on his hands where he's not training and playing and travelling and all the rest of it, what's he going to do when he really gets to make an effort with all his clothes? I just can't wait to see some of the get-ups we see you go in next year.
Yeah, absolutely. Always looking good.
And Harlequins put up a good fight. Bath were worth their win in the end.
Up front, and I think I mentioned it on the pod last week, that Davey Wilson was out for the season, which he wasn't, embarrassingly. But having him coming back... And having the depth in the front row, second row, being able to bring Matt Garvey in either the second row or back row, wherever you want to bring him on, just the impact he can have, it's absolutely incredible. And having the home semi-final, which obviously they've not qualified for the last few years for the semi-finals, that is a big thing. And with that depth, we'll see. But then, yeah, Matt Garvey and Carl Ferns, Ollie Devoto coming off the bench, Rob Webber, who was on the bench, a lot of depth. and Sam Burgess.
Yes.
Looking a lot more at home.
Way more carries than anyone. He had high... What the hell? that's definitely nothing to do with me.
Jay.
Jay in here. JB's clearly in here.
Let the boys play.
Okay.
Thanks, Jay.
But not play that song. Sam Burgess.
Sam Burgess, yeah. His carrying and his defensive work was absolutely superb. Really, really starting to look at home in that number six shirt. It'd be interesting to see when it does come down to the playoffs whether they will put in someone a bit more experienced, like, well, pick either Ferns or Garvey, or continue with Burgess because he was pretty impressive.
Mm. Yeah. I thought Leroy Houston had a big game, and I'm a massive fan of Nick Mullins, the commentator on BT Sports. Some of the lines he came up, what did he call Sinotti for Newcastle? It's like some sort of eel. I can't remember exactly what he said.
Was it a conger eel? Or
something like that. But it was a brilliant little analogy. Well, he did the same with Leroy Houston.
Against David Wilson a lot. What challenges does he offer you as a tight head?
The moose lives up to his name more often.
Here goes Houston, who is a moose on steroids. Absolutely.
That's brilliant. Moose on steroids. I love it. He's got a brilliant way with words. National treasure.
Absolutely.
I love him. So there was one retiring player at the Stoop. That was Hugo Monier. And at the AJ Bell Stadium, our last home game for Mark Cueto, the Premiership's all-time top try scorer.
Yes, who cantered in for another one.
I know. And he had time to hold hands and skip with Tom Brady.
Yeah.
Did you see that? The celebration? That was brilliant.
I did. Tom Brady, who... How old is he? Because he looks young.
26, I think. 25, 26.
He looks a lot older than Mark Cueto does with his grey hair. He is. He's 24.
Tom Brady's
24. Entirely grey.
Oh, I like the fact he's just letting that happen.
But yeah, it was quite a good game. There was times when you felt both teams were a little bit weary from the season. But there's some real highlights, like Josh Beaumont's line off Cipriani and then offload for the first try, for the Custer try, was absolutely superb. And
he's had a great season, hasn't he?
Yeah.
Real fine.
Really good. And deceptively quick for such a big bloke. And he is big. He's 6'7 and 115 kg, something like that. He's a big boy.
He kind of looks awkward, and he doesn't have that kind of Pierre Spiess type athleticism to look at. He's just it's a big lump, though, isn't he?
No, I actually saw him in the gym in Didsbury a few weeks ago.
Yeah, tell us more.
And he was having a bit of a rehab session, a bit of a boil. he is not in bad shape, actually. I was quite surprised with his shirt off. He's in pretty handy nick.
Tell us more, Phil. Tell us more. What was his rig looking like?
Not bad at all. I thought he was like quite kind of wide-hipped, bit of a belly on him, but no, he's in good shape. Probably 10-12% body fat. Good definition on the lad. Looking good.
Nice. Good. Anyway, who else have you seen topless that you would like to talk about? I mean, we're talking about retired players. Do you remember that scene in the Living with Lions, the South Africa one?
Oh, yes.
Where Hugo Monier goes in to do the ice bath and all the rest of the boys that are in there. I mean, there's some big strapping lads in there, but Hugo Monier walks in just his underpants and the rest of the boys just go, oh my God.
I know.
The ridiculous shape that man is in.
Is in. Even Tommy Bowe was put to shame when Hugo walked in. And Tommy Bowe, you know my feelings on Tommy Bowe.
I know your feelings on Tommy Bowe. In fact, Tommy Bowe, this might be of interest to you. I don't know whether you've seen the new Aer Lingus plane, have you?
I'm not Jay. I'm not up on the latest planes.
Well, there's an Aer Lingus plane that is obviously part of the sponsorship deal with the IRFU. And it's got Aer Lingus carrying Ireland or whatever. And it's got on the actual plane itself, on the body of the plane, it's got a big picture with Tommy Bowe. They've picked four players.
Yeah.
Right, if you were going to pick four Irish players, oh, you've seen it now.
I'm just looking at it. But if I was going to pick four Irish players, I'd probably have Bowe.
Yeah.
I'd probably have Heaslip.
Yeah.
I'd probably have Cian Healy.
Yeah.
And then I'd probably still have Brian O'Driscoll, just because he's the best of all time. Or maybe Johnny Sexton, maybe.
Well, I think they've gone down the route of picking people that are the best looking. In fact, they haven't picked forwards. They've gone for four backs. They've gone for Rob Carney.
Yeah.
Handsome chap. They've gone for Tommy Bowe.
Yeah, obviously.
They've gone for Robbie Henshaw and Connor Murray.
Connor Murray, I can definitely see. Mini Mike.
Mini Mike Phillips. Yeah. None of the ugly forwards. You'd have thought Paul O'Connell might have made an appearance there, but I reckon there's no engine and it is powered by Paul O'Connell.
He can't be on the outside because he's on the inside.
Yeah, exactly.
Did you see the big Irish derby this weekend?
No, but before that, I thought, Aer Lingus, if you're listening, you should have put Tommy Bow on the wing. You've missed an opportunity rather than the body of the play.
But then you can only see him from the top down. You need to have him plaster him all over.
Just Tommy Bow, his face on the front.
Yeah.
With his eyes, the pilot looking through Tommy Bow's eyes, and then have his whole body there. Yeah, I like that. No, the Irish derby, go on, Munster Ulster.
Which Tommy Bow scored a spectacular try.
Mm.
It was a good game. It was a bit kind of edgy in the first half. Ian Keatley penalties, who kept the scoreboard ticking over very nicely, particularly behind the slightly more dominant Munster pack. Ulster were 9 points down with 2 minutes left, and then they got a penalty, and then immediately from the restart, broke down the right-hand side, Rory Best, Ian Henderson, who we'll come on to in another second, drew two men, lovely flick out the back of the hand, and Tommy Bow did the rest from still two or three players to beat from 40 yards out and did what he does and scored a superb try.
Yeah.
And then after that, it kind of flipped a bit side to side, edgy battle, and then 10, 12 minutes to go, there was a terrible decision by Nigel Owens. A red card for Ian Henderson.
This isn't just your bias for Ulster.
I'm certain that JB, when he returns and recovers and sees the incident, will definitely support me that this was a disgraceful decision.
And let the boys play.
Exactly. Thank you, JB. And then there's two other red cards this weekend, which I thoroughly do agree with.
Just let the boys play.
No, you're wrong on the others.
Yeah.
Let's take Saramaya by like an Exocet missile through himself at the head of Nathan Hughes with his shoulder and head.
Let the boys play.
No.
No.
You're wrong, Jay.
No. Who was it in Street Fighter that used to do kind of a flying head?
Oh,
head
yeah.
M. Bison.
I think it was M. Bison, yeah.
Anyway, yeah, Saramaya by definite red card. Ian Henderson got a red card for basically the same thing. You could argue it was a bit reckless. You could say he went off his feet, but I don't think it was head-to-head contact.
Mm.
The TV footage is at best inconclusive, but he got a red card.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50. Luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Which led to a Munster try to take the lead, but then an Ulster converted try in the last second to level the score. So it was a great game, slightly marred by that decision, and it will definitely have an impact on Ulster if Henderson is banned, if that ban is upheld. I know that they're going to appeal it.
Yeah,
we'll see what happens.
I don't know if I know it's been a couple of years since I've played and been coached and stuff, but I remember when I was, before I stopped playing, one of the big coaching points around the ruck we were being told was the whole, and you see it in games every single time, you don't wrap your arms round with your arms up at your shoulder height. You do hit with the shoulder, and then you kind of, I'm trying to think of the best way to describe it, you get one arm under and one arm over, so you're kind of doing a judo throw. And I think that's actually, when you look at both Saramaya by, and when you actually look at it, it was reckless and it was stupid, but actually it was part of the way that you're coached to do it. You hit, then you grab and twist.
What you're describing there is what's known as a crocodile roll or
yes,
alligator
that's
roll,
it, yeah.
Which in itself is illegal because you're deliberately going off your feet at a ruck.
It happens every game, every ruck, Phil.
It does. But it is illegal, and you saw the Jean de Villiers injury last year against Wales, which has possibly ended his international career, it ended his rugby career, which was caused by an alligator rule.
But it's obviously being coached, and it's obviously accepted as a standard part of the game. So where is it in the laws that it's not allowed?
It's definitely in the laws. I looked it up fairly recently, actually, because I have an argument with someone. It's going off your feet at the ruck is the basis for it, because you're rolling onto your back and trying to get them onto their back. But the problem is, if someone's leg's trapped and you're rolling sideways...
Well, and we're talking big, strong men. So
Yeah, the John de Villiers, there was Faletau and I think one or two others, and three people basically rolled over his leg and folded it inwards at the knee. And basically everything ruptured, every ligament, the bit of tissue in there. So that, what you're describing, I do accept it is coached, but I think that is possibly something that should be looked at a bit more closely than what Henderson did, definitely.
Oh, but you know what JB would say to that? He would actually say,
"Let the boys play!"
And he'd be going on about, well, if you just introduce another law, that's another thing that the referees have got to police, and that means makes the decision at ruck time even more. Does something need to be done?
I do think the crocodile rule, you very rarely see it where it causes an issue, but when it does cause an issue, potentially catastrophic. The rules are there. I think referees just have to referee it sensibly. And if it's kind of one man on one man and there's no harm, it's okay. But where it's... Yeah.
I mean, you hear about, Premiership teams having judo experts going in and teaching them.
Yeah.
And doing stuff in dojos.
Yeah. But if they're teaching that alligator rule, as you described, that is categorically outside the laws of the game, you would argue it should be penalised every time. Mm. I would say, along with JB, let the boys play. If it's not dangerous and it's not harmful, you don't have to stop every time that it happens. But where there is potential to cause damage, then it should be looked at.
And the other red card?
Well, the other two. The other one, we've mentioned the Ceremai Bai one.
Yeah.
Definitely a red card.
Oh, yeah.
Regardless whether there was intent or not, he flew head to head.
Yeah. If he'd hit me or you instead of Nathan Hughes, we'd have been knocked out into next week.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a good job Nathan Hughes has got a solid head. So I'll say.
He took it well, didn't he?
Remarkably well. Because Ceremai Bai, for a centre, he's a big
he's
strong
a,
boy as well.
He's a big lad.
Yeah. The other one, the Kvesic one, I do think it was a red card
as
well.
Yeah, I think so.
I think
absolutely no malice or intent.
Yeah. Definitely not. And you could see by Kvesic's reaction, he was shocked. And it was partly because O'Leary was in the air, partly because he'd lost the ball and wasn't expecting it, and partly just the timing and the force that Kvesic came through. Mm. But it was dangerous, very dangerous, because O'Leary went off and didn't come back on. And it was without the ball, and he took him through 90, and he landed on his head, neck. Definite red card. Even Jay would have a hard time arguing that.
Let the boys play!
Yeah, I'm not so sure, Jay.
Not so sure about that one, Jay.
I was just going to say, did you notice what happened when O'Leary went off with the Irish players?
No.
Because they had a scrum half on the bench, but he didn't come on. He came on later in the game. They actually brought him and Sheridan on, and Noakes went to scrum half, and Geraghty went to 10.
Mm.
And do you know why? It's because the scrum half was Callum Watson, who's 18.
Anthony Watson's younger brother.
And Marcus Watson's younger brother.
Fact!
Who had been in school yesterday, and the injury happened after, I think it was about 20 minutes, something like that, and it was felt that he didn't want to be risked for the full 60 minutes.
What? Because what's the school relevance?
It's like, God knows.
He hadn't finished his maths homework.
He had to do that on the bench. That was what the director of rugby,
Glenn Delaney.
Delaney. That was what Delaney said. He was in school yesterday, so we didn't want to play him for the full 60. But he did come on with 20 minutes to go.
Wow.
So interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting not to play your nine when a nine gets injured.
That's good. Well, there we go. We've had a glimpse at Bath's next scrum half.
Yes.
Yes, because that's what'll happen. He'll do well for Irish, and then he'll get to London Irish West.
Join his brother
over there in Somerset.
Yeah.
Right. Now, how did this one come about? Oh, yeah, JB had an idea last week, which we didn't have time to put in the podcast, but we thought we'd squeeze it in now, and Phil's done some prep on it. So JB, being a Welshman, wanted to honour the European win of his two countrymen, Lee Halfpenny and Jonathan Davies, who, unusually, are two guys who both wear scrum caps despite being backs.
Yep.
In fact, now I think about it, I reckon one of the positions where you get scrum hats the least is prop. Who actually scrummage?
Yes, my thoughts exactly. So we're going to do a headgear 15. But
headgear 15.
But the props is one of the most difficult positions to actually come up with them.
Yeah.
I wore one a couple of years ago when I had a cauliflower ear that exploded and was horrendous and very, very painful, just to protect that, just to stop it from exploding and filling full of blood again.
JB wears a pink one. as well. That's not a lie. That's a fact. He wears lime green boots and a pink scrum hat,
which is ridiculous when he's playing prop.
It really is.
In his days as a winger.
So headgear 15. Go on, then rattle through some of these.
I struggled a bit on the front row, but I came up with Matt Stevens.
Yeah,
and I put him across to Loosehead because I know he can play both sides.
I know a fact about Matt Stevens. I was at Bath University when Matt Stevens was. He came across and was at Bath University. He'd never played for the university side. He was with Bath. But he had to get headgear specially made because he had a moped that he used to bomb around Bath on, and he couldn't find a helmet big enough. It was on the local evening news about his quest to find a helmet big enough for his Swede.
Fact.
So he's in our headgear 15.
Alongside a couple of Irish boys, Rory Best and Mike Ross.
Yeah, and done. I'm done.
There's a few Irish in this pack. Second row. I've gone for two South Africans, actually. Johan Muller, who played at Ulster, and Victor Matfield.
They do look good.
I'm
quite often not a fan of the hair out the back of a scrum cap, but Victor Matfield, it kind of works. It looks good.
Yeah, he's one of few men who can pull it off.
Yeah.
Back row, I've gone for another Ulsterman, Stephen Ferris.
Yes, synonymous with the scrum cap. I've never seen him without one.
on the golf course, yeah. In the bar, in the gym, alongside two tanks.
Toot toot, Thomas Waldrum.
Thomas Waldrum and the Tullow tank, Sean O'Brien.
Nice. That's good. I like the shape of that pack.
It's pretty solid pack as well.
Into the back, then. It's got to be slim pickings at scrum half, hasn't it?
The only one I could come up with was Isaac Boss.
Yeah.
Another Irishman.
I can't think of another. There must be another.
There must be.
Help us out. At Rugby Podcast on Twitter if we've missed someone who wears headgear.
Then at 10, I've gone for either Earl Rose or Berwick Barnes.
Stephen Larkham is a long production line of Australians who've worn scrum caps at fly half.
Yeah, Larkham would be a good one. Yeah, put Larkham at 10.
He's got Gitto as well.
Gitto and Jonathan Davies, I've gone for my centre combination.
Yeah, I like that.
From the final. My wingers as Gio Aplon and Bruce Rehana.
Nice. Oh, yeah, Rehana. He was a previous top try scorer in the Premiership as well.
Was he?
Yeah.
One season. Wow.
Yeah.
And Lee Halfpenny at fullback to make up the full team.
Excellent. I like that a lot. If there's anyone we've missed out on, it's synonymous with the scrum cap, then at Rugby Podcast on Twitter, let us know. And incidentally, go on.
I was just going to say there's
an honorary one mention for Petr Cech.
No, that wasn't what I was going to say. I was going to say there's been, in recent years for England, two players who have worn the same colour scrum cap who I keep on getting confused. This season has been Jack Nowlan and Haskell.
Yeah.
And previously there was Moritz Botha and Tom Johnston, both with red. I remember someone saying to me one game when those two were playing, God, the work that Johnston has got through in this game. as Moritz Botha.
Yeah. At Rugby Podcast on Twitter, if there's anyone we've missed. And there's been some people that have been getting in touch about stuff we talked about last week. So we were, because there was the general election was looming last week. I'm so glad JB's not here to talk about that this week. Barry Walsh, we were coming up with a rugby government. And Barry Walsh said Paul O'Connell would be the chief whip and Nigel Owens minister for justice.
Yeah, although he did get the decision horrendously wrong this week.
Yeah, and the Toulon chairman, Boujalad, would be the minister for finance.
Yeah.
And also someone watching the Bath game, Ali Stokes watching the Bath game on Friday night against Harlequins, said, wow, this is after a massive hit by banners. Which got a lot of people tweeting in just going, banners! Turns out Miley Cyrus was wrong. Banners came in like a wrecking ball, not her. And also a really good point by Lawrence Cray on Twitter as well. Nice one, Lawrence, for getting in touch. He said, when did Di Young, the Wasp director of rugby, start getting called David Young? Ever since the move to Coventry, he's been called David. Referred to as David.
Yeah, God knows.
He must have had a word. So, yeah, at Rugby Podcast, get in touch with us anytime. So I'm quite surprised that there's no rest week between now and the Premiership final.
Yes.
Do you think this is just to finish the season as quick as possible because the World Cup is looming and all the rest of it?
Well, they are normally finished by the end of May. That's kind of what they generally do. It has changed a bit because you got the rest week with the Heineken Cup final earlier at the start of May. They'd normally be consecutive weekends, which I think it's probably sensible because you often get the same teams play in and then you'll have like Saracens a few years, well, last year losing two finals, or Toulon where they won the Heineken Cup 3 years ago and then lost to Cast. So I think it's to give those top teams a bit of a break. But they had one kind of 2 weeks ago now. So they play a month, four games back to back. I don't think it's too bad. It does make it a bit more interesting, though, with the Leicester-Northampton. Do Northampton rest a few players? Do they play everyone, given that they've then got two back-to-back games?
And there's every chance that they'll play against Leicester.
Yeah.
In the semi-final.
Yeah.
What would you do, right? You're Jim Mallinder. You and Dorian West are sitting down. You're going, right, how do we approach this one? We've got a big squad. We can't afford to leave some players. But do we want to just knock Leicester out of the competition? Do we want to assert our dominance? Do we want to make sure we keep momentum? Or do we want to keep players fresh? And do we want to avoid injuries? And do we want to save ourselves for the semi-final?
I would almost look at that Leicester team and say, if you had to choose between Leicester, Exeter and Saracens, are Leicester slightly weaker than the other two? If you can get parity up front with Leicester, hold them in the scrum, hold them in the line-out and the drive-in maul, they don't have much in the backs that threatens you.
I don't think you'd look at it and go, who would I rather play in the semi-finals? I think you would look at it and go, how are we going to better get ourselves ready for the semi-final? Is it by keeping a few players fresh and keeping the powder dry? Or is it by being battle-hardened and being ready to go?
Yeah, probably is a bit more battle-hardened.
Mm. But I think that's what I'd go with as well. I'd probably pick my strongest team to try and just to beat Leicester.
Given they had a rest a couple of weeks ago, I would say that if there's anyone who's kind of 90% fit, 60% going to play, 40% not going to play, I'd probably rest them. Anyone with little niggles, just give them a rest. Because one week off isn't going to lose it. You're not going to lose any fitness there. It's where you start getting 2, 3, 4, you start losing that fitness.
If you think about it like a sort of cup competition, it's just 3 weeks.
Yeah.
3 games, 3 weeks. You can rest up, massage all week long. You've done all the hard work and you've done all the training. It's just fine tuning. And then it's getting yourself ready for match day. And I think there's more to gain by being battle hardened and like a slickly oiled machine than resting at this stage.
Yeah.
I'm with you. Bearing in mind, like you said, we had the rest week to last weekend.
And you could also say that Northampton, they've just come off a pretty easy win against London Welsh, 46-0 at home. So do they really need a rest? Maybe one or two. If they've had a twisted ankle or big hit or something like that, there won't be many players rested, I don't think.
And every Exeter Chiefs fan is nodding along at this point. Going, yes, I completely agree. So if we assume Northampton are going to put their best team out,
yeah,
and Leicester are going to put their best team out, I think Leicester will have the edge in the up front.
Yeah. I'd go for that in the tight five.
Yeah.
The ball carrying in the back row.
Manoa, Wood, Clark.
And when you've got ball carriers like Dickinson, if he plays, you've got Marath who can carry really well. You've got Laws, who does carry, Hartley. Waller or Corbisiero can all carry. Yeah. So, yeah, Leicester tight five just, Northampton ball carriers just, and then Northampton got a bit more flair and a bit more experience with Myler leading the backs.
Freddie Burns, though, he looked good.
He did.
He looked really good against Wasps.
He did look very good, but I do think Northampton have that little bit extra. I would go with Northampton if they both had to win, if it was the knockouts, but given that Leicester have to win and Northampton don't, I think I'd actually go with Leicester to sneak it.
Well, that would probably, in all probability, squeeze Exeter Chiefs out of the top four.
Most likely.
Mm.
Most likely. Although, if they score 50 points against Sale, anything can happen.
Yeah, the sort of the intensity and the passion that Leicester brought to that game against Wasps was massive. I think you're right. I think I've got a feeling about Leicester.
Yeah, it does mean a bit more to them.
I can't call it. It's so hard to call. I want to see the teams before I would make a call. It will be a special. In fact, that's a game I'd love to watch live.
The atmosphere will be excellent. I think tickets will be quite hard to come by. It'll be a hell of a game.
If Leicester win, then in all probability, whatever Exeter manage to do at Sandy Park, unless it's a massive win against Sale, big points.
Yeah.
And again, Sandy Park will be rocking.
Yes, it will be. It'll be a good bus ride back for Sale, though.
Yeah.
Last game of the season.
Oh, yeah. Nice long bus ride back. What do you remember about those days? What was your best bus journey that you can remember?
We had a few horrible ones.
Redruth.
Redruth was the worst. It's 8-9 hours, something like that. I remember the best one was going to Launceston, which is a little bit, it's like an hour closer than Redruth. It's still 7 or 8 hours. And it was kind of a smash and grab and beat them in front of their own fans, in front of the, I can't remember what they call it, one of the stands, the Cornish All Blacks, their name, and beat them with a try not long from full time. And then everyone was like, right, let's get out of here. And it was showers in like 5-10 minutes, bang on the bus, get a few cans in and come back. Have you had any good ones?
Yeah, the one heading back from Barking last day of the season from Manchester. That was a good old time of it. Really roasting hot day, like a cricket pitch. Won comfortably, and then all the tinnies on. But there was the game we played. Play the game where you race from the front to the back, climbing over the
seats,
naked over the top of the seats.
Well, you've got to be naked. It's a health and safety thing.
You don't absolutely
want like a shirt or a pocket snagging in one of the seats.
So true, Phil. So true. Got to be careful. A couple of other little bits to just mention that have made some news. Warren Gatland using the phrase "hugely worried about George North's future."
Now, I think this is Gatland playing some mind games.
Do you?
Yeah. I think if George North does come back for the last few games and gets another head knock, then he would probably have to have a seriously extended period up to the maximum of 6 months or longer, which would mean he would be ineligible for the World Cup.
Gatland
said, Gatland is trying to position it to say there's no chance of that. There should be no chance of that happening, so that he's definitely fresh for the World Cup.
What he said is he met with George North and his agent, and he's publicly said, "Now I'm hugely worried. If I was being purely selfish, I'd say George, don't play in the last few games. Get yourself right for the World Cup." He's been out for a considerable amount of time, but it's one of those situations where he's a young player, and if he picks up two or three more of those in the next year, that's going to finish his career. I see what you're saying. He's just trying to wrap him in cotton wool for the World Cup, which if he was a New Zealand player or if he was in the Welsh WRU dual contract, he wouldn't play. There'd be no question. Warren Gatland would have the say and he'd go, "Nope,
and
you're not playing."
You're quite right. But as it stands with his current position, it is obviously the first and foremost, it's safety. But assuming he's had a prolonged period of rest, which we know he has, and it's deemed that he's symptom-free and all that, and they say he's fine to play, then he should go ahead and play.
Oh, let the boys play.
See, I don't reckon JB would be saying that. I think JB would be saying, don't let him play.
Don't let the boy play, whatever you do.
Do not let the boy play. We'll see if he's selected. But Warren Gatland's saying his. And the other thing, I know we can't have a week go by where we don't mention the situation that's happening with Stefan Armitage, Nick Abendon and these players playing abroad that being considered. Well, England internationals, apparently, would oppose the inclusion of overseas-based players for the World Cup. There's some off the record conversations that a journalist has had with England internationals, and the players do not want outsiders to come in. Now, do you think this is like self-preservation, or do you think it's a principle? I don't know.
I think partly self-preservation, partly principle, because they have built this kind of team ethic and this environment, which, from all accounts, is very good. And very different to how it was leading into and during the last World Cup, which obviously, as we all saw, wasn't very good. But I think the rule is exceptional circumstances. And me personally, I don't think that should be form. I don't think at the moment either of those two should be considered for inclusion. However, another injury, or if Mike Brown isn't fit, for example, or a couple of injuries in the back row, then that creates exceptional circumstances, because you could say if your first two or three players who you would consider in that position aren't available, then you're going to be bringing someone from outside the squad anyway, whether it's England or France or wherever. So it's not going to make too much difference.
And finally, I've got a little, a couple of rounds of Rugby Social I want to play with you. So these are rugby players who do love their Twitter. They do love getting on Twitter and doing some stuff. This is some stuff I've found online. Talked about the Aer Lingus plane thing. That was going to be one of them. But Quade Cooper, for Mother's Day, which was this weekend in Australia, just gone, Quade Cooper purchased his mum a what? Was it a Bentley?
Big contract.
Was it a penthouse apartment, or was it a pool for her back garden? A Bentley, a pool, or a penthouse?
I'm going to say, I know he's signed for big money for Toulon. The other two do seem a bit expensive. I'm going to say a pool.
It was. He bought his mum a Bentley.
What?
For Mother's Day.
What?
That's the Toulon dollar.
God, a Bentley's £150,000. Yeah. That's what a lot of Premiership players earn a year. More than what a lot of Premiership players earn a year. That's the average, I think.
That's bonkers. And, wow. And what about this one? Craig Joubert is, or was, according to his Wikipedia page, a transvestite prostitute involved in a dwarf-tossing controversy, or was an international tennis player, which of those is the case.
I think it's going to be something negative after he's made a bad decision, or arguably a bad decision against someone's team. I'm going to say transvestite.
Transvestite prostitute.
Transvestite prostitute, sorry. Sorry, Ernst.
Not Ernst Joubert, it's Craig Joubert.
Craig Joubert, sorry.
You're right. Craig Joubert's Wikipedia page says he was, before he took up refereeing, he used to pull tricks as a transvestite prostitute. Now, Wikipedia is quite often accurate, but I would just make
maybe
no comment.
Not. Yeah, maybe not in that instance.
That may well not be on Craig Joubert's Wikipedia page if you go and have a look at it now. In fact, let me check it now. Let me just check.
Yeah.
See if it's still there.
If it's still there, it's probably true, right?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, it's now been changed. It's now been changed saying he went into corporate banking for 5 years before taking up a refereeing on a full-time basis. It did say he then went into being a transvestite prostitute, a profession in which he spent 5 years before taking up refereeing on a full-time basis.
Now, we don't actually know which one was the true one.
No, we don't.
Because it could be Craig Joubert constantly updating it. People think it's incorrect and are changing it back to, say, banking. But Craig Joubert gets infuriated and actually changes it back. No, why don't people believe me?
Well, some would say that you'd have more shame being a banker than than the other. So anyway,
some people might. Yes,
I suppose we should also mention the fact that the playoff final for the championship has now been decided. It was a spirited Bristol made hard work, although it's a difficult place to go up to Rotherham. But Bristol made it through to the final, and they will take on Worcester.
Yes, it's Wednesday the 20th of May. The first semi-final takes place because it's a two-legged affair. The first final takes place because it's a two-legged affair. But the Bristol-Rotherham game, by all accounts, was a great game. Yeah. With Rotherham, after 50 minutes, leading 16-6.
Just as they were in the first match.
In the first game, yes. I think there's something to say that Rotherham arguably have the strongest starting lineup, but Bristol, with all the money they have and the replacements they can bring in, their squad depth has managed to get them through.
Bristol have got the resources, the fitness people to have a team be able to play 80 minutes.
A combination of the two.
Lot's made of Bristol, and wow, they're making all these big signings and they're going to walk up and they're going to be way better than London Welsh. I think obviously any team, Worcester or Bristol, will come up and be better than London Welsh. But looking at the Premiership and the teams, I think it's going to be really, really hard still, even for Bristol and the players they brought in to bridge that gap.
I think you're right. It kind of has a feel. They have brought in some youngsters, some talented players, and they've developed some of their own through their academy. But they have brought in kind of a few ageing players, the Appeals, your Henson.
How many teams would Henson get into in the Premiership?
Yeah.
Starting and...
Not many. He's kind of on and off for a couple of years at
Nicky
Bath.
Nicky Robinson, Dwayne Peel. Well, Dwayne Peel might get in the odd team, but...
Yeah, Dwayne Peel is still a good operator.
But we will see how that one goes. Right, in the meantime, at Rugby Podcast, get in touch with us on Twitter as we build up to this. Oh, the Pro 12. How's that shaping up for the final weekend of domestic matches? The top four all played each other, didn't they?
They did. And there's 1 point separating all four, with Ulster unfortunately in fourth, but all the rest of them on 70 points level. Ospreys are top, then Glasgow, then Munster, then Ulster. So like you say, Munster face Dragons, so that should be a 5 point win. Ospreys travel to Connacht. Isn't the easiest place to go. Ulster have to travel to Glasgow, knowing they need to win by 5 points to have a chance to... get a home semi-final. That's a tough place to go. Glasgow are playing very well at the moment. Did lose to Ospreys to relinquish the lead in the league. So I would expect, maybe Glasgow to win. Top four
to be separated by 1 point. The top three all on 70 points. That's amazing.
It is amazing. And it does show kind of... At the top, in the top half of the league, it's very, very competitive. And all those teams would be, well, certainly be competitive against anyone in the Premiership and virtually anyone in the top 14. There is then a bit of a jump to the next group of teams. And then obviously you've got the two Italian teams at the bottom who are a little bit adrift, to say the least. But yeah, the quality at the top is undeniable.
JB will be back with us after to tell us all about his tales from Marbella.
Let the boys play!
And he'll also be back to talk about rugby, as will me and Phil. At Rugby Podcast, get in touch with us in the meantime. Nice one, Phil.
Cheers, Tim.
See you next time.
Right, basically, you got to be like a midget in a urinal. You got to be on your toes.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.